Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going to find one.
Are you confused with the ups and downs of the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stocks.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Hi, everybody, and we are back, and we have an important show tonight. We talked a lot about what's going on in the market. A lot has happened in the last week, in the last 2 weeks. I know the markets are going down, not just in the United States, but all around the world. The dollar also has gained value. It's lost a lot of value against the yen, but it has gained a lot of value in these cross trades, particularly against the higher yielding currencies, like the New Zealand dollar, the Australian dollar, the Canadian dollar. So I want to talk about what's going on and what, you know, the proper action for us to take. I know we've gotten a lot of calls this week, today, particularly from clients who are nervous, watching the values of their accounts, the dollar values drop. And so, you know, I want to talk about that, hopefully to preempt any future calls, if we can address some of these concerns on this radio show today. Also, just a few notes on my appearances. I was on Fox News today again at Cavuto at, I think, at 4:20 I was on. I will be on tomorrow on CNBC, The Call. I will be a guest, and I will be on the show for the entire hour of 11 to 12. I'll be commenting. So I'll probably get a lot of stuff in since they're going to keep me on for an hour. So 11 to 12 on CNBC tomorrow on Thursday. Then I will also be on Fox News on Saturday morning on their business block. I will be on Cavuto on Business. I believe it airs from a 10:30 to 11 Eastern time, you know, 7:30 to 8 on the West Coast, and 10:30 to 11 on the East Coast. So I don't know. Those are the only appearances I know about right now. Just keep watching the website daily if you're interested in seeing any other appearances. Anyway, getting back to what's going on in the markets, and I know I've got a few callers on hold, and let me just talk a little bit about what's going on before I take the calls. The markets are really coming under a lot of pressure. And what I think is happening, and remember, if you read my book, Crash Proof, one of the things that I suggested was certainly a possibility was that as this thing started to unravel in the United States, that there would be spillovers and the stocks around the world would initially go down, including the stocks that Euro Pacific Capital clients owned. So the fact that our stocks are going down does not invalidate the wisdom of buying them, and it doesn't mean that they're going to keep going down and that therefore we should sell and go to cash, because that, I think, carries far greater risks. The fact that our stocks are temporarily falling for reasons of liquidity is no need to panic, or no need to feel that we need to, take our profits while we still have them if, you've been long-term clients or if you just started out. We have clients who opened up their accounts for the first time within the last month, and some of these clients are down 10%. Some are down slightly more if they bought right at the peaks, when they pay a commission and then they see a drop. In the last few weeks, I think the Dow was down about 8%, and, the NASDAQ and the Russell 2000 down even more. Our stocks are not necessarily going down more than the U.S. market, although what's happening, the New Zealand dollar has dropped from 81 cents 3 weeks ago to 70 cents. It's down 13% in 3 weeks. That's the biggest decline I've seen in that currency in such a short period of time. Our New Zealand positions are down more than 10%. Some of our other positions in countries like Singapore and Hong Kong, some of those have actually increased during this time, believe it or not. But overall, I would guess that our accounts are off at least 10% in general from their peak prices of a month ago. But I don't think it's time to, you know, try to cut and run and limit your losses to 10% and go to cash, or, you know, for longer term clients to think, okay, the run is over. I've been invested in foreign stocks for 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years. Now is the time to get out. I disagree. That doesn't mean that I think that the market can't fall anymore. Clearly it can. And with respect to the U.S. market, it probably will. But, you know, there's one of two things that can happen, you know, going forward. Either this is another correction, right, in this bull market phase that we've been in for the past few years nominally in the U.S., and that the Dow is going to move back up above 14,000 again and make a new high. I'm not saying that it's going to do that, but obviously that's a possibility. If that possibility occurs, which is what's happened every other time we've had a violent sell-off, maybe not as violent as this one, but I believe that everything that we own abroad will come back even stronger, and that the money will still move predominantly offshore and out of U.S. assets and out of U.S. dollar-based investments. So I think if we think the market's going to recover, it certainly doesn't make sense to sell. It makes sense to ride it out. On the other hand, if we think that the U.S. stock market is going to continue to collapse, that this is the beginning of what I've been predicting for the last several years, the unwinding of our bubble economy, that it's starting with the housing market, which was, you know, one of the pins that I predicted could prick the bubble, and explode, you know, going to collapse the mortgage market and housing and, you know, lead us into recession and bring down the stock market. If all this is transpiring, and the U.S. market doesn't recover, right, if we just keep going down and we go into this recession, then I also think we need to keep our stocks, because I think our stocks will ultimately do much, much better in that scenario. Because I think what's going to happen, and what I've been predicting is going to happen, is a decoupling from the global economy from the U.S. economy. And I still think it's, you know, the majority of investors out there don't even understand that the U.S. is headed for recession. The conventional wisdom is still that the economic fundamentals are sound, and what we're having right now is a temporary crisis in liquidity due to some panic selling in the market, and people feel that it's not going to impact the overall economy. I think they're completely wrong, obviously, and we're going to get into that later in the show. But once I think the U.S. economy does, you know, contract into recession, or people understand that, and the U.S. dollar finally comes out under the selling pressure that it should be under. Right now, I think the U.S. dollar is being supported by the unwinding of some of the yen carry trades, with that is causing selling of a lot of currencies, which is lifting the dollar by default. I think once the dollar really comes under pressure, I think you're going to see this not just be a general selling of stocks everywhere, but a selling of U.S. assets and a movement away from the dollar towards other currencies. And I think investors around the world will realize that the global economy can function very well, in fact, function even better without the United States. Because the problem, again, with the United States is we have not been adding to the global economy. We've been subtracting from it. All we've done is consumed the goods that other people produced, meaning that there were fewer goods available for the rest of the world, and we've borrowed a lot of money and squandered it on consumption that would have been better utilized, invested in capital formation around the world. So I think once the world has their capital back and has their goods back, they will be far better off, and I think those people are, you know, investors are going to come to those conclusions. In the meantime, you know, the stocks that we own that are dropping in value, I don't think that there's any threat to the dividends in any way. Obviously, as the dollar goes up relative to these currencies, the dividends are somewhat smaller to the extent the dollar doesn't rebound right away. But as far as their overall earnings, I don't think the earnings of the companies that we own are going to be in any way jeopardized by a U.S. recession or problems in the U.S. housing market or the U.S. mortgage market. And since we bought these stocks to hold them and collect the dividends, the fact that right now the prices are 10% down or more in some cases, I don't think it makes a difference unless, of course, you're unfortunate enough to have to sell. And that's what's going on. I mean, there's a liquidity crisis right now. You know, in my book, I also have a chapter on the stock market, and I write quite a bit about hedge funds. And everything that I predicted would happen in hedge funds is happening right now. You know, just like the predictions I made about mortgage markets and the mortgage-backed security market and secondary markets drying up. I mean, the housing implosion is basically taking place exactly the way I predicted. I mean, everything I said was going to happen is happening the way I said it. And the same thing that I wrote about the hedge funds, it's starting to unravel there as well. I talked about hedge funds as being risk funds. that what they were really doing, they weren't making spectacular returns, they were making ordinary returns, but leveraging them up. And what's happening right now is these hedge funds are having to deleverage. They're having to deleverage for two reasons. One is a lot of the hedge funds owned mortgage-backed securities or other types of collateral, and all of a sudden the lenders realized that the collateral wasn't worth what they thought, and so they basically told these hedge funds, hey, you got to come up with more cash because this collateral is no good. In order to get cash, they have to start selling assets. When they start selling assets, they further depress the value of those assets. That affects other hedge funds that own those assets, because so many hedge funds are employing the same strategies. And that put pressure on different hedge funds, because as one hedge fund starts to unwind a position, it causes other hedge funds to have problems that have similar positions. Then it gets compounded, because the clients, the investors in the hedge funds, decide they want their money back. So they call up their hedge fund manager, and they say, hey, I want to redeem. Well, now there's even more pressure because now the hedge funds need more cash, but at the same time that they need more cash, their investors are trying to withdraw cash. And remember, these funds are highly leveraged. So if I'm a hedge fund investor and I represent, you know, some pension plan somewhere, and I call up my hedge fund manager and say, hey, I want my $10 million back, the hedge fund has to sell $100 million worth of stuff to get me my 10. And of course, all this feeds on itself. And in many cases, the hedge funds, even those that had mortgage-backed securities or other things that are getting clobbered, and they'd love to sell those, but you know what? There's no buyers. So what they have to do is they have to sell something else. They have to sell something that somebody else is willing to buy. But when so many people are selling and so few people are buying, the prices go down. And nobody is selling, for example, you know, the utilities that we own in Asia or Australia or the refineries in New Zealand or, you know, the energy trusts in Canada. The stocks that we own are not being sold because people want to. They're being sold because people have to. Either they're scared or they just plain have to because they need to raise the money because their creditors or their clients are demanding the cash. And so this is a rush to liquidity. Assets are being sold regardless. You know, you talk about throwing the baby out with the bathwater. That's what's going on. Assets around the world are going down as people need liquidity. They need to repay debt. And so, you know, our assets are going down too. But it doesn't affect us unless we're unfortunate enough to need to sell them. Now, very few Euro-Pacific Capital clients are on margin. Those of you who are on margin, the margin amounts in your accounts are very small relative to the size of the assets of the account. Therefore, the likelihood of anybody receiving a margin call is very slim. If you feel that you do have some margin in your account, and you're worried about it, call up and talk to a broker and we can see if there is any chance that there might be some danger of a margin call being triggered, in which case potentially we could take preemptive action now to try to minimize that possibility. But as I said, I think it will apply to very few, if any, Euro-Pacific Capital clients. You know, 99% of the clients have no margin debt at all. And those who have had margin debt in general have benefited tremendously from it over the years. So they might still have quite a bit of excess profits, and so that might be the only circumstance. But that's what's happening. People are getting margin calls. Clients of other brokerage firms and certainly hedge funds were not as prudent as we were. They have a lot of margin positions out there, and again, certainly hedge funds, because the name of the game was margins. And I wrote about this in my book, and I said the problem with hedge funds is they take all this risk with other people's money. And I said there are so many hedge funds in the same strategies, it was a self-perpetuating spiral. As more money was sent to these hedge funds to chase these returns, they accumulated more of these positions, which pushed them in the profitable direction. They were marking their own books. They were generating their own profits because money was flowing in. And I wrote in my book that the minute this reversed, right, the minute the clients wanted their money back, the profits would evaporate. And I predicted that there'd be massive losses among hedge fund clients. And the only people who were going to make money was the brokers, the managers, who profited before the bets went bad. What's going to happen ultimately is there's going to be a reassessment of this whole entire industry. And as I wrote in my book, Crash Proof, I think by and large, you know, most of these hedge funds are just ripping off their clients and charging them much too much money, not because they're great investors and they know what they're doing, but just because they took a lot of risk with their money and the people who gave it to them, you know, were not smart enough to figure this out or didn't care enough to actually look at what these guys were actually doing with their money. But the bottom line is everything that is happening right now, right? And if it's following my scenario where the U.S. economy is going into recession, and it's amazing to me that every time I do these shows, you know, Fox, CNBC, Bloomberg, and I'm in a little bull bear, people keep saying that everything is fine, that the economy is great, that the fundamentals are still good, that unemployment is still low, that the economy is still growing. All this is nonsense, of course. You know, the economy can't grow anymore. It's done, right? If maybe there's not a lot of unemployment now, but wait 6 months, there's going to be tons of it. There's going to be lots of unemployment. I mean, the problem is people are looking in the rearview mirror. They don't understand that this phony economy can't exist without unlimited access to cheap, no questions asked credit. Americans have to be able to borrow money. If they can't borrow, they can't spend. If they can't spend, an economy that's based on consumer spending collapses on itself, which is what I've been predicting all along, because it's unsustainable. And people don't realize that. And it's not just, you know, the mortgage market. It's the market for all securitized debt products. And I wrote about this in my book, too. It's the market for automobile loans and consumer appliances and furniture and student loans, all kinds of credit card debt. All this market, nobody wants to buy it anymore because people are realizing that we can't pay it back, that Americans are a bad credit risk. They can't afford to repay these loans. Finally, people are learning that lesson the hard way. And this economy is going to unravel because, you know, and I've always said it wasn't going to be the American borrower who was going to give out first. It was going to be the lender. The lenders were the ones that were going to cry uncle. They were going to stop lending, and that's exactly what's happening. And so the ultimate play out on this is a big collapse in our economy, a big recession, and that is a huge negative for the dollar. Now, for now, Ben Bernanke is trying to play it cool. You know, he would love to cut. I mean, can you imagine they're saying, well, we don't want to cut until we actually see a recession, you know, in the numbers, right? It's too early to tell. I mean, this is like if somebody jumps off the top of the Empire State Building, you don't need to see him hit the ground to know that he's gone. You know, there's no way that this is not going to be a recession. And believe me, Bernanke knows it. And he would love to be cutting interest rates. And the reason he's not doing it is because he knows if he does it, the dollar will fall through the floor, and long-term interest rates might actually go up, and then it's game over. So he's going to wait, and he's going to bluff as long as he can and pretend that, you know, he's tough on inflation and he's worried about, you know, and he's not worried about a recession. Well, I don't know how much longer he's going to be able to keep that up. Because as long as he keeps that up, stocks are going to keep falling, and eventually it's going to be obvious that a recession is unavoidable. And once those conclusions come, then you're going to see the big move down in the dollar. Then you're going to see a 50 or 100 point up in the price of gold in one day. And, you know, you're going to see all the anti-dollar, anti-U.S. investments we've been making pay off. In the meantime, we just have to wait patiently. You know, sometimes when you're in a poker game, you're in a card game, you got to lose a few hands in order to win the game. And it doesn't matter if we're losing a couple of hands right now. Ultimately, we've got the winning cards, and by the end of the game, we're going to have a big stack of chips in front of us because we're playing the end of this, the end of the scenario. And some people say, well, doesn't it make sense? Why don't we just go to cash and ride this out and then buy back in? Well, ideally, right, if we had a crystal ball, we could do that. But first we'd have to figure out which cash to go to. I mean, I certainly wouldn't want to go to the dollar, so we'd have to go to some foreign cash. But the problem with that is logistically, right? I mean, we've got, I don't know, 7,000-8,000 accounts. How do we get all those accounts to cash? Who do you call first? And even if we could get them, what if we're, you know, how do you get them back in the market? How do you even know when to get back in? Because what if you get out of your stocks? And then there's a big bounce. The market moves up, and the stocks you sold go up 5% or 10% very quickly. Do you just buy them right back? I mean, that'd be pretty stupid, because how do you know they're not going to go right back down again and make a new low, and you've just whipsawed yourself, and you've lost even more money. So what if you get out, and the stocks go down even more, and now you're glad, you pat yourself on the back, hey, I'm glad I got out, and then you watch it go down further, and then it starts to go back up again. Now, you know, you don't know what to do. You're waiting to see where and all of a sudden it jumps up. And now it's higher than where you got out. Well, now what do you do? You know, do you buy back in? Do you wait? I mean, I think that we're better off where we are. It's like I've used the analogy of the Titanic before, of a sinking ship. I look at it this way. Everybody who's been following my advice, all of the clients who have listened to me and who have accounts at Euro Pacific Capital, that account is your lifeboat. You're in that lifeboat. When this ship sinks, when the U.S. economy sinks, you should be fine. What I don't want to do is take a chance on leaving the lifeboat hoping to get back in it. It's like if we're on a Titanic and we're in a lifeboat, and I don't want to get back on because I think there's another half an hour or so before the ship sinks, and maybe we can get one last dance in. You know, I don't want to try to do that. You know, I don't want to risk not getting back in my on the lifeboat. So I just say we stay here, and if anything, you know, a lot of our accounts have cash in them. A lot of the accounts have earned a lot of dividends recently. We've got a lot of cash in our accounts. If you have cash, put it to work. If you have more money, send it in. Take advantage of other people's misfortune, other people's leverage, the fact that people are being forced to sell assets, you know, for a fraction of what they're really worth. You know, I'm looking at, you know, one of the stocks that we own in the U.S., and a lot of clients own it. I used to pinch it a lot years ago. I don't buy a lot of it recently, although I'm starting to look at it again, is the Aberdeen Asia Pacific Income Fund, FAX. And that thing hit a 52-week low today. I mean, the stock went down to 570. 3 weeks ago, it was at 650. And it's just a bond fund. And they post the NAV every day. And it was at about a 4% discount. And now it's at a 14% discount. So the actual value of the bonds haven't dropped very much. It's a closed-end fund, so they're not getting any redemptions. What's happening is the people who own the fund are selling it because they need the money. Either they're scared or they were on margin, they had their stops hit, but they're just getting forced to sell, and in order to clear the market, the prices are going off at very low levels. And you know, too, and I'll quickly, I know I'm going to take a break and I'm going to get to your calls, but my bet is, even if your brokerage account is down 10% in the last couple of weeks or few weeks, anybody who's listening to this who owns a house, I guarantee you, your house has lost more than 10% of its value in the last 3 weeks. You might not know it because it doesn't trade every day, but I bet that if you had to sell your house 3 weeks ago and you had to sell it in one day, as opposed to having to sell it right now, you would get at least 10% less, maybe even 25 or 30% less. The housing market, the bottom is dropping out from under it. So even if your brokerage account is going down, you're still actually increasing your wealth relative to how many houses you'd be able to buy with the account. And since everybody else's assets are falling, if they own stocks, on a relative basis, even with our accounts going down, we're still probably better off than most people who own real estate and U.S. stocks, who are potentially losing a lot more. And they don't have, you know, there's a situation, a lot of U.S. stocks are going to keep falling, right? I mean, a lot of these stocks are going to go bankrupt or close to it, especially those in the mortgage lending industry and the home builders and the retailers, anything that's domestically focused. I mean, the U.S. stocks that have a shot at coming back, of course, are the ones that are taking advantage of the strength of the global economy, which I think is going to continue to get stronger, especially when they decouple the U.S., the caboose of the global train. They decouple us, and they can move a lot quicker. But let me take a quick commercial break, and I'll come back, and I'll go to the phone calls.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, I am back. I think I might have lost Andrew from Oregon. Andrew, are you there? Okay, well, if you want to call back, I'm taking calls now. I'll go to Jim from California. Go ahead, Jim.
Hey, Peter.
How are you?
Good. I'm a client, and I've taken the whack like everyone else, so like you just talked about, but I'm still up since I started with you, and I did sell my house a couple of years ago, and I've been renting, and I couldn't be happier, so I just got to wait it out, like you said. But I have a question. I know I can only answer this ultimately, but I've got most of my assets with you guys. I do have about $300,000 in my 401k with my company, and I know you've been asked this, and I've been with them 20 years. I don't want to leave the company. I can't get at it any other way other than just take the hit on paying the state tax, the federal tax, and then there's a 10% penalty.
To do, as I said,
to do it.
You know, to kind of look at the various options they give you and pick the least of the evils. I mean, so pick a foreign fund, an emerging market fund, a foreign stock fund, a metals fund, a gold, a natural resource fund, a foreign bond.
Don't offer it. They have an international fund, but it's dollar hedged, so I'm still vulnerable. But what's my ultimate cost? Is it just the 10% penalty? Because I would have had to pay income tax on this money if I didn't put it in the 401k. I would be at a lower tax.
Well, obviously, you don't have to continue to make new contributions. You can just stop doing that, and you can just invest the money yourself. But as far as the money that's already sitting there, if you want to pull it out and you don't have the option of rolling it over into another IRA, you'd have to pull it out and pay income taxes and penalties. I mean, what you might be able to do with your employer is see if you can quit and come back. I mean, maybe work as a consultant in an interim and then come back long enough to quit, get the money rolled over into your own IRA, and then come back. You know.
But you think it's pretty crazy to just take the hit? It would be like 50% of the value if you had...
I would try to find a way not to have to hit.
Yeah.
If there's a way to move the money out, and I would try to work with the employer and say, look, I just don't like these options. I think I'm really going to go down with this ship. Can I quit that way, you know, and come back? Can I work as a consultant for a month and then come back on after I've rolled this thing over? You know, I don't know. I would talk to them and see if there's any options other than just, you know, paying all those taxes and penalties.
All right, and a second question. I'm reading a lot of analysts are saying deflation is coming, not inflation, and that will kill us and our investments.
Well, no, it won't. I mean, because you have to understand what's going to deflate. See, when we're talking about deflation, we're talking about a credit contraction, which is going to happen, which is happening right now. And during a credit contraction, house prices are going to go down, stock prices are going to go down. You're going to see asset prices falling. What's not going to be falling are consumer good prices, right? Like the price of milk or the price of wheat or the price of gasoline. You know, those things are going to get more expensive because as assets are losing value because they've been bit up with all this leverage and the U.S. economy goes into recession, the dollar is going to lose value relative to other currencies and consumer goods prices are going to rise. Even if consumer goods prices fall, they will fall less than asset prices. So it's not, you know...
You're not worried about that, because I've read that, and they say the gold and silver is going to be one of the first victims of...
I mean, look what happened in the Depression. Gold went way up during the Depression. I mean, prices went down. If you look at what happened, stock prices collapsed 90% during the Depression. You know, in general, the CPI went down, consumer prices dropped, but gold went from $20 an ounce to $35 an ounce. I mean, so gold didn't go down during the Depression. It went up. I mean, I think whether you have asset deflation or, you know, inflation, of course, doesn't mean that real estate prices won't fall or stock prices. What's going to happen is I think the asset deflation, and if you look at Ben Bernanke and what he said before, what the Fed will do to prevent that kind of, you know, deflation is they will print as much money as they have to stop it from happening. And I think that when you get a deflation in a fiat system, you get massive inflation because the central banks look towards their only tools, which is printing money. You know, if we were on a gold standard, well, if we had a gold standard, we never would have had this massive inflationary boom in the first place. But I think that the U.S. dollar has to be one of the biggest casualties of what's going to happen.
When does true deflation happen? I mean, in what circumstance? Those circumstances.
It's happening. You're having credit is being destroyed. Asset prices are going to fall. And I can tell you, even if the stocks that we own fall, okay, even if our foreign stocks fall, they will fall a lot less than everything in the United States, a lot less than U.S. real estate, a lot less than U.S. stocks. And so you as an American citizen, having your assets abroad, will be in a much better position. You will be able to live a substantially better life, even though these foreign assets have gone down. Because what counts is not how much money you have, it's how much money you have relative to what everything costs.
Right.
And so I'm sure that what we're going to see is a big reduction in the standard of living of Americans who have been living beyond their means. Our assets are going to be marked down considerably relative to foreign assets, and we're going to suffer. And so these other stocks are going to be worth more. I do ultimately think that a deflationary collapse of the credit bubble is very bullish for gold. I think that as it happens, as the central banks, you know, look to bail out, because remember, what's going to happen in this real collapse? And here's the other predictions I made. Fannie Mae is going to go bankrupt. They're talking about Fannie Mae and, or Freddie Mac trying to bail out the housing market. They can't bail out anything. They're going bankrupt, too. They're going to need $1 trillion-plus bailout. The bailouts, the Pension Guarantee Corp is going under. All these quasi-government agencies, without a government bailout, they're all going to fail. Now, is the government going to stand back and let that happen? I don't think so. Does the government actually have any real resources to bail them out? No. How do they bail them out? They got to print money. That's all they can do. That's all they can do. That's all they can ever do.
Yeah.
And so if you think, yes, the Fed is going to sit idly by, and the U.S. government is going to sit idly by and watch real estate prices collapse 50, 60, 70%, watch, you know, all the government, all these government agencies go out of business. Watch banks fail. Watch depositors lose their money. Watch this massive collapse and sit back and do nothing. Yes, if they absolutely do nothing, then probably, you know, our stocks might go down. But they're not going to go down nearly as much as everything else, and you're still going to be able to buy, you know, you're still going to be better off.
Why are so many people fooled by the Fed?
They do that. Even if the government allows this collapse, there's going to be a recession. And foreigners are going to want their money back. I mean, there's no reason that the Europeans are going to see the U.S. economy unravel and think, you know what, I got to send more money to the United States. No way. What they're going to do is say, I want my money back. Give me the, I want my euros back. I want my yen back. They're going to be selling U.S. assets. And foreign central banks are going to say, you know what, we want out. We want no part of this. They're going to stop buying our bonds. There's no way a deflationary collapse of this asset bubble is bullish for our money. It's bullish. It's just impossible.
I was going to ask why people are getting fooled by the Fed's infusion of money to settle things down, but really, the market's kept going down since they've done that. And
people look. The average investor out there is clueless. The average guy, you know, the fund managers, they don't know anything. They can't understand. That's why when you look at these people or listen to what they say, and they say, "Hey, the fundamentals are great. Why is everybody ignoring the fundamentals?" They're so clueless. They have no idea how bad the fundamentals are. The fundamentals are shit for the U.S. economy. They've always been shit. They just don't know that.
Yeah.
And so they don't understand what's changed. They don't understand how basically we were on life support and the plug's been pulled. You know, and the patient's going to die without that plug. You know, without that lifeline, without that easy credit flowing in, this consumer economy is just going to flatline. They haven't figured it out yet.
And the Fed,
when they do, there'll be a rush to buy gold, there'll be a rush to get out of the dollar, there'll be a rush into quality assets. And that's what we own. You know, what we own is what everybody is ultimately going to go to. And so as long as we know that, we got a winning hand, all we have to do is not throw it away. And we just sit back, and eventually we win the game. And my clients, you don't have a lot of leverage, or you have no leverage. We got plenty of dividend yield. We got plenty of income. We don't have to worry. We don't have to panic. We don't have to sell a thing. Because you know what? If our stocks were going up right now instead of down, we wouldn't be selling either. If they, you know, I didn't buy these stocks to sell them. I bought them to keep them. I bought them to keep them, you know, in many cases, until you die. And then you give them to your kids. I bought them for the cash flow. I bought them for the income they produce and the fact that they produce that income abroad. And they generate that income abroad, so it'll always give us real wealth, real purchasing power when we collect those dividends. And I think the most foolish thing someone can do is see a temporary drop and say, oh no, I better sell. Because if you sell and you get dollars, you own something inherently far riskier. And then, let's say you've been a client of mine for years, and let's say you started with $1 million, and now you have $3 million, and you say, oh no, my $3 million account just went down to $2.5 million, I better cash out. So you cash out, and you put your $2.5 million in a money market, and then, you know, the next thing you know, you never get back in. We have hyperinflation, and your a cup of coffee is $1 million a cup. And now instead of having one cup of coffee, you can now buy two cups. Big deal. The fact that you have an extra million or two means nothing. So all those years of profits and all those gains can be wiped out very quickly with a hyperinflation, which I think is a real possibility. Now, even if we don't have hyperinflation, but the dollar just loses two-thirds or three-quarters of its value, then, you know, even though you have two or three times as many dollars as you started with, you know, 5-10 years ago, you're still worse off. So I still think you're better off not worrying about what's happening, riding it out, knowing that the stocks that we own and in the countries that we own them have absolutely nothing to do with any of these problems. All these problems right now for the global markets, they're all emanating from the United States. They're all emanating from our inability to service our debts because we have borrowed more money than we are capable of repaying. It's a problem with the U.S. economy. It's not a problem for Europe. It's not a problem for Asia. It's a problem for us. Now, are some people in Europe and Asia going to lose money? Yes. They're going to lose money because they loaned it to us and because we can't pay it back. But the overall economies in the rest of the world, after this hiccup, are going to be better off because this giant weight, the United States consumer, that they're carrying on their backs, they're going to get rid of it. They're not going to have to subsidize our consumption anymore. And that's what it's been. The world has been giving us a giant subsidy. We haven't benefited them. They've been supporting us. And the minute they stop doing it, they're going to be better off. We're the ones that are going to suffer. And people are going to put two and two together and you know, these markets are going to decouple. And eventually, all this liquidity-driven selling is going to come to an end, and you know what? The sellers will be gone. Money is going to come in to buy these stocks cheap. There won't be any more sellers, and the markets will come back almost as quickly as they went down, at least abroad.
All right. Well, thanks, Peter. I'll hang in there.
Thanks for the call.
All right. Bye.
Okay, let's skip to Ulrich in Ontario, Canada. Go ahead.
Yes, hi, Peter. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I just want to make a comment. I was watching Cutlow & Company tonight, and there's pure panic. I mean...
Yeah, you know, I watched a little bit of Cutlow. I was, you know, busy fielding calls from nervous clients.
Yeah, it's pure panic.
I did get to hear Cutlow say that he wanted the Fed, he was urging the Fed to buy subprime mortgages and to buy jumbo mortgages. I mean, here he is, Mr. Goldilocks, Mr. Free Market Economy, yet he wants the government to come in and start buying up all this worthless paper and socialize the losses on the taxpayers?
Yeah, the other comment I'd like...
That Cutlow wants?
I think Joe Battapaglia, he is even more bearish than you are now.
Yeah, you know, Joe Battapaglia, I saw some of his comments. I mean, Joe is going to have to come to me and give me some massive apology because the stuff that Joe is saying, I was saying all this stuff for the past two or three years in these bull bear debates in the Money Show. Yeah. He was saying this is nonsense. Peter's always talking about. I was talking about the subprime. I was talking about the credit boom. I was talking about how the housing bust. I was talking about all the problems. I was talking about all the speculation. I mean, everything he's talking about. Now, I predicted it, and he told me I was nuts. He laughed at me. He said it was nonsense. Now he's saying the same thing. Now, to his credit, I have to give him credit, he's saying the right things now.
Yeah, that's right.
He's saying the right things now. But what I want to find out, the next time I meet up with him, I didn't go to the last Money Show, and I'm not going to the one, I haven't gotten a call from the guy. I haven't gotten an email. I mean, I want to see if the guy's man enough to come to me and say, you know something, Peter? You were right. You were right for the last few years. I was wrong. I mean, that's what I'm really looking for. But I do give him credit. And I've sent him a couple of emails, and he hasn't answered them. I said, hey, Joe, you know, I saw you on CNBC the other day, and, you know, I got to hand it to you. You know, you're saying the right things now. I've given him a couple of kudos, and he's never even returned my email. So, you know, maybe he didn't get them. I don't know. But, and it's funny, too, because I think the next time we do a bull-bear debate, he's going to have to sit on my side of the table. He's going to have to be a bear.
Yeah, that's right. I'd like to ask you a question regarding the credit markets and this meltdown that we're having right now. I mean, basically, it started in the subprime, but, you know, many of the holders of subprime, they also hold, you know, credit card tranches and car loans. And
yeah, you know, and I often say, look, it didn't start in subprime. Okay, that's a mistake that people make. Subprime is just where the symptoms of this disease showed up first, because subprime, you know, was, you know, it's like if a dam is faulty, maybe it's going to burst, you know, in someplace, one hole. But it's not that it bursts in that hole, and now that hole is going to cause other holes. The pressure is building everywhere, and more holes are going to come. So, I mean, it's the whole system. It's not just subprime. I mean, and you know, a guy today, you know, on Fox was trying to tell me, well, you know, people have all these gains in their houses. Even if the prices are going down, they have such huge gains if they bought 5 or 6 years ago. Well, the problem is, if they bought 5 or 6 years ago, a lot of them refinanced. A lot of them pulled a lot of those gains out and already spent it. A lot of people who bought their houses 5 years ago have much bigger mortgages now than they had 5 years ago. And this is a huge problem. And again, it's not just subprime mortgages, it's all mortgages, it's prime mortgages, it's anybody with an arm, and it's not just houses. It's people who borrowed money to buy cars, to buy furniture, to buy appliances. They can't pay it back. Americans' wage growth has been stagnating. You know, a lot of Americans left the workforce. There are a lot of homeowners that basically stopped working. That's one of the reasons unemployment is so low, because people figured they were homeowners, they didn't need a job. They were making more money living in their houses than they were working. And they were counting on forever living off their home equity. And this is all coming to an end.
Peter, but regarding this, I mean, now that all of these markets have basically dried up and nobody wants to hold this toxic waste anymore, doesn't it basically guarantee that interest rates have to go up? I mean, even if...
Yes, they're going to go up. And I said, as I wrote in my book, I talked about the fact that the market for mortgage-backed securities was going to dry up. And so the reason that real estate prices were able to double and triple, the reason that they had all these crazy loans with nothing down and no documentation of income was because Wall Street made it possible. Because the people originating these loans didn't have to worry about getting paid back, because they knew the minute they made these loans, they can sell them to Wall Street, and Wall Street would package them up, get S&P and Moody's to slap some high credit rating on it, and off it would go to Japan or China, you know. And that can't happen anymore. So what's going to have to happen is, if somebody wants a mortgage, and if a bank wants to originate a mortgage, they're going to have to be willing to keep it on their books, which is going to mean they're going to have enough deposits to hold it, and they're going to have to care about getting repaid, which means they're going to require 20% down payments, they're going to require an 8 or 9% interest rate, they're going to require fully documented loans, they're going to want independent appraisers that they hire, and it's going to be more difficult to buy a house, which means housing prices have to collapse. And then once you realize that home prices are going to collapse, that's it. You know, for the last 5 or 6 years, when I've been having these debates with people, and they've been saying, it's okay that we're doing all these commercials. It's okay that we've been borrowing all this money, because you're ignoring the assets. You know, you're looking at the liabilities, but not all the home equity and all the assets. Well, when the real estate prices collapse, right, that part of the balance sheet goes away, but the liabilities are still there.
But you know, when I listen to...
This whole thing is going to unravel.
Peter, when I listen to Kudlow, basically he's saying, basically the Fed, they can lower interest rates anytime they want. But I mean, as a matter of fact, if you go to the bank and you're trying to get a loan for a new house, you cannot get a loan, you know?
Well, that's the other thing, too. Even if the Fed were to lower rates, and they're hesitant to do it because they know the dollar could cave in, but if they lowered rates, they might actually send long-term rates up, not down. Right? If they did that.
The point is, I mean, who cares what the Fed is asking for the short-term rates? I mean, if I want to get a loan, I can't get a loan under, say, 20%.
No, yeah, what I'm saying is...
It doesn't make a difference. I mean, basically, because, I mean, all of this subprime and all these tranches, they have been downloaded to whatever retirement funds.
No, what I'm saying is, even if the Fed lowers rates, and even if long-term rates don't spike up as a result, it's not going to... It's too little, too late. It's not going to matter.
It doesn't matter, that's right.
The lax lending standards are not going to come back. People who have adjustable rate mortgages, even if the Fed lowers interest rates 50 basis points, 100 basis points, 200 basis points, they still can't afford the payments that they're about to reset to. It's done. And the thing is, and people won't be able to buy houses because they're not going to be able to come up with the down payments unless the prices collapse. And if the prices collapse, you know, it's not going to matter, because the people that are in houses, even if interest rates go down, they're not going to have enough collateral to refinance. I mean, if you bought a house for $500,000 and you have an adjustable rate mortgage, right, and the Fed lowers interest rates, and now you go to refinance because the rates are lower, but if your house is only worth $300,000, how can you refinance? No one's going to loan you the $500,000 against $300,000 in collateral.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter. We're finished.
But there's going to be a huge spillover, as I see it, for example, into companies that, you know, need capital. Let's say, for example, junior mining companies that need capital to, you know, build a mine or whatever.
Mining companies will get capital because people are going to realize what's going to happen to the price of gold. Price of gold is going to go sky high as a result of this.
Yeah, I agree with this, but I don't necessarily think it's going to happen right away. And there might be many...
I don't know when it's going to happen.
Meantime, that are going out of business because...
Well, the more gold stocks go out of business, the higher the gold price is going to go.
I think the metal... There's too much risk in the companies themselves, because you don't know if they can build a mine or if they can actually raise the capital to do it, you know. And even
the risk you have when you buy, you know, when you speculate in mining companies that don't have operating mines already, that don't have you know, reserves in the ground. But anyway, let me hop. I have a couple more calls. I want to take my last break, and I have a couple more calls before the end of the hour.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back for the last calls.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, we are back. Thanks to the callers for hanging on. We've got about 15 minutes left. Let me take, is it Len from New York we're up to?
Yes, you can hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi, I just saw you on TV about 2 months ago. I always keep CNBC on, but with the sound off. And I happened to be listening, and I said, holy smokes, there's a guy that sounds just like me. Because 2 years, 3 years ago, I sold my house, and I've been trading up Canadian dollars since then. And I read your book. I've been going through your old webcasts and interviews on Wall Street, and find it astonishing that although I totally disagree with you politically, and nonetheless, economically, the numbers can't fall any other way than the way you've described them. The only thing I was, and you know, the last couple of days, it seems that you could tell that the world hasn't learned the lesson yet, because in the face of all this crisis, the dollar's been strengthening, where one of these days the crisis is going to cause the dollar to collapse.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question about it, and if it wasn't for the support of foreign central banks, it already would have. So, politically, are you just to the left, then? Is that where you disagree with me?
Well, yeah. In fact, I was insulted that without any explanation of all the things that you said in your book there, you made some quick mention of Rubenomics being the source of all the problems.
So what happened with the Rubenomics? The problem with Rubenomics is Ruben was the guy who decided to refinance the national debt short term. So he's the one that put the entire country on an adjustable rate mortgage. That was his.
But under the Clinton years was the only time when they were winding down the debt. It was Reagan and Bush.
Was a lot of that cost.
Pulled that all up.
A lot of that was because that were being generated by the dot-com and the NASDAQ bubble. A lot of that, it wasn't because of anything that they did. It was because of the bubble that had produced a temporary increase in revenue, and also because of some other accounting tricks that weren't unique to the Democrats. I mean, you know, I'm not a fan of Bush either. I mean, I've been a big critic of the Bush administration and what he's done. I've been a big critic of Alan Greenspan. I mean, I criticize the Republicans as much as I criticize the Democrats. In fact, I criticize the Republicans more. In fact, it's interesting. Every time I get on a one of these debates, and you know, on television, you know, most of them are Republicans, and you know, who I'm up against, and they usually accuse me of being a Democrat or a liberal. They say I'm like Michael Moore. They think I'm a socialist. I've been called a communist. So just because I don't think that everything is rosy, the Republicans immediately assume I'm some kind of commie. So, you know, it's like, you know, I do actually have more, there are more Democrats now that seem to philosophically get on board with me than Republicans, even though philosophically I'm very much a, you know, a libertarian. That's why I support Ron Paul in the Republican primary. I'm very much of a, you know, laissez-faire, you know, constitutionalist, you know, limited government, sound money kind of guy.
Can you hear me?
I'm very critical of both the Republicans and the Democrats.
I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. But anyway, thanks for the...
Wait, no, but I had a question.
All right.
You know, all of the things, the suggestions that you had, and, you know, it seems to me the big problem is that, you know, it looks like we're both looking for a crash at the same time. There was a great old Sherlock Holmes where, you know, the objective that Moriarty was going to kill him by just making him bleed to death slowly. And I was wondering what the percentages you think might occur that way as compared to a crash.
I don't know. I mean, regardless, the patient's going to die. You know, whether he dies a quick, painless death or it drags on for a few years, I don't know. All I know is, at the end of the day, however it turns out, the dollar is going to be worth a lot less than it is now. The U.S. economy is going to be much smaller in real terms. We're going to suffer a diminished standard of living. We're going to have to live within our means. We're going to have to start producing again if we want to consume. We're going to have to start saving again. We're going to go through a gut-wrenching, long recession. And under that scenario, we've got to be better off with our assets outside the country than inside the country. We've got to be...
Absolutely. Even if your clients say sell, at least they can keep it in foreign currency.
Yeah, I mean, that would be what I would say. When clients tell me I want to sell, I say, fine, what currency do you want? You know, but I would rather have assets, because I still, in the back of my mind, I'm worried about a lot of global reflation, these central bankers getting together and deciding that they got to print, and, you know, under that scenario, you don't want to own their paper, you want to own real things. So
I agree, owning
real estate, owning utilities, owning pipelines, owning refineries. I'd rather own real stuff that's always going to be there, it's always going to represent wealth. No matter what happens, people are going to need electricity, they're going to need water, they're going to need energy, and I want to own the vehicles and the resources that provide that. Because I know if I own that, I'm always going to have something real, and I'm always going to have a better standard of living than the guy who doesn't have it. And that's what counts. It all counts, you know, if everybody, you know, if you're a millionaire and everybody else is a billionaire, it doesn't mean you're rich. But if you've got $100,000 and everybody else has nothing, you're better off, even though you've got less.
Right. Oh, well, hopefully you'll also pay some taxes.
Yeah.
Thanks for taking my call.
I got two more calls, so I want to make sure I get to them. Let me go to Mark from Canada.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for taking my call, and thanks for writing a great book.
Thanks for reading it. Tell your friends.
I'm in the process of reading it. My friend already has read it. He lent it to me. You made a good call on U.S. real estate. What do you think of the future of Canadian residential real estate, given that the U.S. may go into recession?
Well, the U.S., it's not that the U.S. may go into recession. The U.S. either is already in a recession or will be in one shortly.
Okay.
I'm negative on residential real estate pretty much anywhere they speak English as a primary language, and in a few countries where they don't. I would not be an owner of real estate anywhere in the world right now on a residential basis. I still like commercial real estate and industrial properties in parts of the world, but I think commercial residential real estate is going to get cheaper, and I still would rather be a renter than an owner of foreign real estate. But I don't think that real estate in other countries will necessarily get killed to the extent that real estate is going to get killed here. And I also don't think that other countries' economies are as dependent on the artificial stimulus resulting from the property bubble as the American economy was.
Oh, let me stop you right there, because that's a very pertinent point you just made. You have mentioned investing in Canada, yet 80% of Canadian exports go to the USA. We found this out last night on the StatsCan website. Given the scenario you're predicting for the U.S., won't Canada be in the same predicament?
Not in the same predicament. I mean, certainly Canada's exports to the United States will suffer, but their exports to Asia will pick up. You know, the purchasing power that Americans lose will be gained by somebody else. So as long as Canada can produce things, there's going to be a buyer. If it's not in America, it'll be someplace else. So, you know, there will be some disruptions, and I have recommended to Canadians that, look, you know, just because you're in Canada doesn't mean you don't have to diversify. I have plenty of Canadian clients who I'm helping to invest in Asia, who I'm helping to invest in Europe. I think it makes sense because, yes, Canada is very close to the United States, and it might be more negatively impacted by our collapse than might be other economies that trade with us less.
Yes.
Ultimately, we're not a good trading partner because we can't pay. So what good is it if your biggest customer can't pay you? You're better off finding other customers.
Right.
And that's going to happen. So and the Canadian dollar is going to go a lot higher. So, you know, when you can come down here and buy $2 or $3 for one Canadian dollar, you know, you guys are going to be a lot richer. And, you know,
that's an interesting point. Even though you think that our economy might suffer, you think our Canadian dollar is still going to continue to rise against the American dollar.
Right. I think the Canadian dollar will fall against the Singapore dollar, but, you know, it's going to rise against the American dollar.
Very interesting.
Well, thanks for the call, and spread the word up there in the north. And, you know, the more
people will
understand the truth, the better.
Very nice talking with you. I'll let you go to the next caller.
Okay, the last caller of the night. I got 5 minutes left. Let's go to Gary from Arizona. Go ahead, Gary.
Hello, Peter. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, thanks for calling.
I got two questions. Hopefully we got time for them. First of all, I'm one of those newer clients that you just talked about, so I'm down a good amount since moving over to you. I'm also not complete in my plan, and I'm looking at getting into precious metals through your PERS program. I was hoping you could speak quickly to that, because then I have another question about, you know, what you think is...
Money, when you moved money over to us, where was it before you moved it to us?
It was exclusively in U.S. stocks and U.S. mutual funds.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you had left it there, you would have dropped, too. So it's not like, if your money was in a money market, that'd be one thing. But if you sold U.S. stocks and bought foreign stocks, you're in about the same predicament. I mean, as far as, the overall net worth.
Yep.
As I say, I've had a lot of clients, and we've had sharp declines and bad timing. I mean, sometimes I bought for other clients right before big declines, and 6 months later, they were way ahead. I mean, so I don't know if this is going to be another example of that or not. I don't know what's going to happen in the short run, but ultimately, I just say ride it out. I think you've done the right thing. I think you're better off with foreign stocks and domestic stocks, certainly the ones that we would have selected for you, and I think you just relax. I think everything that's happening right now, this is not something that's happening that's catching me by surprise. This is nothing that I didn't predict. So all of this was taken into account in my overall forecast. I expected this stuff to happen. It doesn't bother me when it happens. It only bothers me to the extent that some of my clients get annoyed and I have to spend time, reassuring people that what we did was the right thing.
Well, my question was mostly about gold, because that's the one piece I haven't done yet, and I'm still looking at getting into gold.
Gold hasn't dropped that much. Gold stocks have been clobbered. I mean, they've been clobbered. Today was like the worst day for the gold stocks I've seen. And as you know, I own a lot of gold stocks personally. But physical gold has not dropped that much, and either it's about to drop, either the weakness in the gold stock is signaling that gold itself is about to drop, or... the fact that gold has held up so well, it's going to rise. And a lot of people think, well, gee, why isn't gold rising right now as a flight to safety? I think right now it's not a flight to safety. It's a flight to liquidity. I think people are having to sell gold because they need to raise money to fund their margin accounts. But ultimately, I think the safe haven money moving into gold will overwhelm the money looking for liquidity. And I think gold will rise. And if it really takes off, then the gold stocks are going to follow. But, I would much rather own gold as my vehicle for safety than U.S. Treasuries or any dollar-denominated debt instrument.
Well, you led into my last question, if you got 60 seconds, and that is, I know you're not a big short guy, but what do you think about shorting Treasuries?
Well, I mean, shorting Treasuries, I mean, I think they're going to go down. I think he's shorting futures. I mean, the things that you can short are financials and debt instruments and home. I mean, anything related to the U.S. consumer, if you want to have shorts on, those are the things to short. But, right now it's also kind of dangerous because there can be a pretty big spike. We've dropped so far so fast that, but you might want to look around for any big rallies and then you can short into it. But anyway, I'm running out of time. If you want to talk specifically about that, just call my office. But anyway, thanks for the call. Don't remember to read my book if you haven't read it already. And I got about...
Thanks for your time.
So thanks, everybody, for listening. Tune in to the to CNBC tomorrow and then Fox on Saturday morning. Get to the website, www.europac.net, EUROPAC.net, or give us a call toll-free at 800-727-7922. But, if this show has done enough to calm you, if you were nervous, then don't call, because we'll probably get a lot of other calls from people who didn't hear the show. So thanks a lot, and I will be back again next week with another issue, episode, and a report on what's been going on. Thanks.